to Resounds, arts and culture on the high plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. We're talking today with a new professional theater company in Billings, Yellowstone Repertory Theater. They're debuting their season with the Pulitzer Prize-winning play Doubt, A Parable by John Patrick Shanley.
And then we travel around the world. We interview filmmaker Jessica Jane Hart, who is traveling to the Republic of Congo to do a documentary on the work of Kaori Fuji, who is the founder of Music Beyond, which provides cultivation for local musicians in developing countries. Welcome to the studio, the founders of Yellowstone Repertory Theater, Dina Brophy, Caitlin Hart, and Craig Heisengate.
Nice to see you all. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Hello.
Thank you.
Yellowstone Repertory Theater is a new professional theater company in Billings. And since announcing the formation of this organization in February, they've acquired nonprofit status. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Are about to launch their debut season. Three plays, the first beginning in November and running through June.
And those really fun plays. Wow, what diversity. Doubt, A Parable by John Patrick Stanley, The Glass Menagerie by Tennessee Williams, and Crimes of the Heart by Beth Henley.
Just in case John's listening, Shanley, not Stanley.
Shanley, John Patrick Shanley.
Now, both Corby and I had the pleasure of seeing all of you together in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and then shortly after that, the announcement of this theater company.
Yep.
Kind of curious, you know, what was the catalyst for creating Yellowstone Repertory Theater?
Well, that show was the catalyst. We had started talking about doing Yellowstone Rep before we decided first that we all wanted to do Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. And we talked Sarah Butts into directing it. And in the process of trying to figure out how to do that, we decided that we wanted to maybe start our own theater. But we weren't organized enough to do that, so we asked Patrick and Shad with Sacrifice Cliff Theater if they would give us some production help, and they were really generous and able to do that. So they made the show part of their season.
And then you were able to kind of get together and begin your own organization. Tell us a little bit about why you felt the need to found this company.
This is Dina. Each of us had our different reasons for wanting to do this, but at the core, we all feel strongly that professional theater is different in that it's going to pay its artists.
Mm-hmm.
And recognizing that we certainly feel that there's tremendous value in doing that and acknowledging those efforts with, you know, payment, albeit modest at this point. But that's at the core. And then beyond that, it's, you know, we all have reasons for, you know, the types of theater that we want to do. We have very specific vision of what it is we'd like to do.
I know all of you, but I'm not sure that our radio audience does. So tell me a little bit about your professional theater background, because all three of you have been involved for a long time. Caitlin, do you want to start?
Sure. I started doing theater in high school, fell in love with it, and then I have a BFA in acting from the University of Montana, where I got to do a lot of amazing productions all across the board. And then one of the main reasons I went to school there is they're affiliated with the Montana Repertory Theater, which is a professional touring company. So I did three shows with them. I actually did Doubt with them and played the same role. And then I played Annie Sullivan in The Miracle Worker. And then I was in an educational outreach tour across Montana. And we did an adaptation of The Diaries of Adam and Eve by Mark Twain. And I also worked at Fort Peck Summer Theater. So those are I have kind of dabbled in the professional world. That was really only a year and a half total of working professionally, but it was amazing because part of what the Montana Rep does that is so cool is they hire students and recent graduates along with equity actors. So I got to work with some really experienced, talented actors from all over the country and learned so much from them and just got to experience what it is when everyone is coming to create something excellent and is committing everything, and they're getting paid. And so there's just this, there you can commit as much as possible because you're being paid. You're taken care of.
And Dina, you've had a long career in theater in Billings.
I have. I'm actually the only one of the three of us that hasn't truly worked professionally, but I like to think I've earned my stripes. I did study theater in college and then took, 20 years or so off to have a family and raise some kids. And then I 15 years ago, jumped into the community theater scene here in Billings and have steadily done productions since then. I don't know that I've taken a break for even a year. So, yeah, I think I've dipped my toe in. No, I've dipped my full body into the community theater scene here in town and have gained a lot of good
experience. And I think once you play Martha, there's nowhere else to go. I mean, that's a pretty heady role in Virginia Woolf, and you were marvelous.
Oh, thank you. It's certainly a bucket list role for sure. There's just too much there. That's anybody ever comes up and says, "Do you want to play Martha?" Yes, you say yes. You take that by the horns and you run with it because it's just a tremendous opportunity. It's like a whole acting tour de force in one single show.
And Craig, you were George.
Tell us a
little bit about your background in the theater.
Well, I grew up here in Billings and then left for about 40 years and moved back here about 8 years ago. While I was gone, I did work as a professional actor in Seattle and San Diego. I also did quite a bit of directing and teaching in both of those places. And when I moved back here, started doing community theater at both Venture and then Billings Studio Theater and then at Nova after the merger there.
Well, and with this nonprofit status, it sounds like you'll be able to start to raise funds and really be able to support this really ambitious course that you're setting off upon. You want to ensemble actors together, directors, designers, mount productions of classic plays, contemporary works, focus on women playwrights, small cast musicals. This is a big list, guys. It's very exciting.
One of the things we keep telling people is that we think Billings deserves a professional theater. We think Billings, has audience for really accomplished works, and we think that the kinds of plays we want to do are plays that the other community theaters in town aren't doing that much of. So we're going to focus on classics. We're going to focus on great contemporary plays like Virginia Woolf or Doubt, plays by women, and then maybe small cast musicals. We won't be doing the big, huge, spectacular musicals like Billings Studio Theater does, but those are the kinds of plays we really want to do, and we hope people will want to come and go along for the ride.
Something that really struck me a couple years ago when we were first talking about this is that almost all of the other large cities in Montana, Helena, Missoula, Bozeman, Whitefish, Kalispell, all have professional theater companies, and Billings doesn't yet. And so with Billings being up and coming with the art scene and also being the biggest city in Montana, we just feel like it's time.
I worked at the Alberta Bear Theater for many years, and it was easy to book big musicals. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to book theater. Montana Rep and Aquila, I think, are two maybe of only four or five companies that I know that actually tour classical drama. Mm-hmm. And we have always brought those two companies into the Alberta Bear Theater. So it is interesting to do classical theater in our community, and I sense the need for it because it's not touring.
Yeah, it's in fact, I've asked other directors, why don't you do Shakespeare? Why don't you do classics? And the response is always that they won't sell. But I don't know. It seems to me if the quality is consistent and if you pick the right kinds of plays and put the right ensemble of actors in them, that I think that we sure hope that there will be lots of people who want to come and join that experience.
Are you getting a lot of interest from the talent out there?
Oh, yeah. In fact, our season is cast. We basically invited some of the actors in town that we really want to work with and perhaps make members of our ensemble as we go forward to come and do auditions for The Glass Menagerie and Crimes of the Heart. And we've got great casts for both of those shows. I'm really excited. And a lot of them have been saying they can't wait to get started on some of those shows.
So it's too late to put my hat in in from the gentleman caller?
Well, you'll have to arm wrestle Dan Nickerson for that one.
He will be better.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What attracted you to this play? What made you want to lead your season with this?
This is another one of those plays that selfishly has a really great role for a woman my age. As it turns out, I'm actually not playing the role of Sister Aloysius. But, I mean, initially we were looking at, you know, what is it that we could showcase both Caitlin and I, since Craig was going to be in the director's seat. And this was a play that we had talked about. We have a long list of shows that are of interest to us. And this was one that kept coming up to the top for most of us. So it just kind of won. It, you know, as we were talking about the elements that we wanted to bring in and the types of shows that we wanted to do, it just fit.
Well, and the more we rehearse this play, the more I'm impressed with how timely it is for us to be doing this play right now. And when you think about the issue of what's true and what's false and what's fake and what's real in the news, when you think about the issue of sexual harassment and, you know, in every part of society these days, this play is really powerful in terms of how do you know who to trust? How do you find out what really happened? How do you deal with all of that?
One thing I love about the play is, in fact, the title, because there is doubt. Stories, and you're not sure. At the end of the play, there is still doubt, and it makes it very powerful.
We really hope there will be lots of debates on the way home from the theater from this.
What role do you see theater playing in those kinds of conversations? It sounds like this is a really important piece to stage and helps maybe get those thought lines outside of the creative theater and into our own lives.
Yeah. One of the things I love about theater is it creates so much empathy or invites empathy that even if someone comes in and they've never thought about this possibility or this story or this person before, they spend an hour and a half with that person and hopefully leave, especially the way Shanley has written doubt, it's so powerful. It just grabs you and it leaves you with all of these questions. And I think most of the great shows that we're attracted to kind of leave the audience with questions and leave the audience with something to grapple with and hopefully invite conversation amongst the audience.
Tell me about where these plays are taking place. What theater you're using, the time frame for them.
Well, we're going to do all three shows at NOVA, Center for the Performing Arts, down on Montana Avenue, right across from the Depot. All of us have worked there before. I think it's a great place for our audiences because of the surrounding restaurants and breweries and there's actually more parking now that the Rex is not operating. But it's also, they have such a great variety of performance spaces there. We're doing Doubt in the cafe, which is one of the large classrooms in the back of NOVA. And they've put some permanent seating back in there, so it seats about 40 people. It's going to be really intimate. You're going to be right in the office with Sister Aloysius, whether you want to be or not. Then the other two shows will be in the Black Box, and that will give us lots of flexibility about how we arrange the seating in there and the relationship between the audience and the performers.
In fact, when you did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, it was theater in the round.
Yeah.
So it was fun to look across the living room of Martha and George and see the audience's response.
Mm-hmm.
As the drinking went on.
Yes.
And on.
And on, and
on. Yeah, everybody was at that party.
Yeah. What do you see for the future of this organization? You've announced three plays. You've got a season. You're headed right into it. You're in tech week right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's maybe a little hard to project out. But what do you hope to accomplish with the formation of this new organization?
One thing we really envision is down the road being able to invite actors from around the country to come work with us, to bring, even for one show in a season, the thought of even bringing actors who, we have so many talented actors from Billings who are touring the world, they're in New York, they're talented actors, and it'd be so amazing to bring them back and hear their voices in the art scene and then send them on their way and then they can come back the next year. And so really create this kind of almost international ensemble, you know, from around the world would be so cool.
Well, we really want to make something that's going to last. You know, we want to make something that will serve Billings arts audiences in the same way the symphony does or YAM or, you know, the other professional arts organizations in town. One of the reasons that or one of my inspirations, I think, was going out to hear live music and realizing that there was a group of musicians in town who were able to make money doing what they love to do, whether it's teaching or, you know, playing in different ensembles or in the symphony or whatever. They get to kind of choose who they want to play with and what kind of material they want to play, and they get recognized and rewarded for their training and their dedication. So we want to make that kind of a culture for the best performing artists in town, theater artists and others, because theater is such an eclectic and inclusive kind of an art form. We can use musicians and dancers and choreographers and get a lot of people into what we're doing. So we want to make something that's going to last.
We really want to strive for creating a place for ourselves in the community where we're a theatrical cornerstone, where we have brought together an ensemble of people that are of comparable levels of commitment and ability. So what that creates for you then is productions that are consistent, and they're consistent in quality and engagement. And we want to just make sure that that's a place that we have firmly etched out for ourselves in the community, because it's one of our fundamental beliefs.
Well, I love that you've created an ambitious road to head down. So thank you, Dina Brophy, Caitlin Hart, and Craig Heisengay of Yellowstone Repertory Theater. And Anna, what's coming up?
Well, you know, you can catch Doubt. It runs through November 18th at NOVA, Center for the Performing Arts here in Billings. Tickets and more information online at yellowstonerep.org.
Today in the studio, we have director, producer, and filmmaker Jessica Jane Hart, whose most recent documentary, Makoshika, just made its debut on Montana PBS. Jessica, a great movie.
Thank you.
So, Jessica, you grew up in Billings, and you've spent 10 years working all over. You've been in Germany, New York, Montana, California, and your next project is going to take you to the Republic of the Congo to document the work of flutist Kaori Fuji and the work that she's doing with the, help me pronounce this, is it Kashina Symphony Orchestra in Central Africa?
It's the Kinshasa Symphony Orchestra, and that Kinshasa is the capital city of the Congo, of the DR Congo. There are two different Congos, so we say DR Congo to refer to the Democratic Republic.
Right.
The other one is just the Congo, which is totally different. So,
gotcha. Yeah. So you're heading into one of the more dangerous parts of the world for outsiders, especially women. Tell us about this project and what attracted you to it.
So I met Kaori Fuji through her husband, Eric Cecil, who's a Montana boy. He is originally from Miles City and then went to high school here in Billings. And he's a really good friend of mine. And so, you know, when I moved out to New York, they were really sweet, and Kaori made sure I had work doing stuff like taking photos for her album covers and different personal projects. And they've both been really supportive throughout my career. And then after Makoshika came out, actually, I had told Kaori that I was really interested in helping her with this Music Beyond project and the work that she's doing. I'm totally inspired by it. She's incredible, and learning about the orchestra itself was just, I'd actually seen a 60 Minutes about the Kinshasa Symphony Orchestra. It's this incredible group of self-made musicians who get together and practice really difficult pieces of classical music, and they create something beautiful for the community. I mean, you can hear it bellowing through the walls of the church, and it's just kind of this crazy juxtaposition that I'm just really excited to go and be helping Cowrie to promote and shine light on these people who have dignity, you know, but are often not represented that way. So it's really exciting to be able to go and help show them in a totally different light than what they're used to. And quite frankly, most of them are pretty tired of being shown as these these downtrodden, impoverished, you know. I just keep thinking of the word dignity, you know, and it seems like a lot of what they've been, the light that's been shining on them is one that you know, kind of hints that they don't have any. And right. And these are people who are holding their head high and are proud of what they've accomplished musically.
For people that don't know, Kaori Fuji, aside from being an international flautist, she has several albums. I've seen many of her YouTube videos. Incredible. She has that beautiful gold flute that she plays often.
You know, I've actually seen her play a couple different ones. I'm not exactly sure which one you're talking about.
I think she's almost famous for that. But
yeah, she
anyway,
is.
She's also the founder of Music Beyond. It's really the project that you're involved mm-hmm. with. And it provides outreach and cultivation of local musicians in developing countries. When did she start that project?
I think it's approaching its fourth year. And yeah, what she's doing is going and teaching master classes and teaching seminars so that these Congolese musicians can be better music teachers and kind of teaching them. You know, for the most part, they're all self-taught. And so she's just doing some fine-tuning, correcting bad habits, helping to give them the instruction so that they can meet these international standards and be a orchestra that can sort of compete and be recognized on a global level, you know, up against, you know, with the Munich Philharmonic or something like that, you know. So that's kind of the goal, is to help bring them to another level.
Mm-hmm. And from what you've witnessed, what does music provide for them? You talk a lot about how it is an integral part of their lives. I've heard you speak about this before.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Music Beyond website, Kaori has posted direct quotes from the musicians themselves asking them why they practice music. And they say really incredible and striking things, like one person says, "I can miss my food and I can miss my clothes, but I cannot miss the music." Another person says, "Just because I'm Congolese doesn't mean I have to hold my head down all the time. I can play music and I can hold my head high." You know, and so it's something they're, you know, they're playing at a level that anybody should be proud of. And I think it's a rare opportunity for them to be recognized as creating something beautiful and something that the Congolese people in general can be proud of. One thing that Kaori also has just helped to create last year was the first all-female chamber ensemble in the Congo, which is a really big deal. And there, while I'm there, we're hoping to go visit a girls' school in Kinshasa, and they're going to be playing at an Ambassador's National Day celebration. So it's a really cool way for these women to be on a stage and mm-hmm. recognized for doing something positive.
This reminds me a little bit of the Silk Road Project. Are you familiar with Yo-Yo Ma's Silk Road Project?
Yes.
Which I love because classical music doesn't have geographic borders. And we sort of think of classical music as European, but to see people in different cultures respond to Mozart or Beethoven is so magical.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Jessica, the logistics of traveling to the Democratic Republic of the Congo are immense. You've just received a visa, which is quite an accomplishment because of the sanctions imposed on our country. And it sounds like you're going to be allowed to ride in the official Japanese embassy car, which is going to cut down your costs significantly for armed security. How do you balance all these risks that you're entering into as a filmmaker?
I just have confidence in Kaori and the Japanese embassy's security advising team. We are going into it with this realistic, you know, originally we had thought we were going to have armed security all the time. But now that we are going to have this embassy vehicle, it kind of changes everything because that car is protected by the Geneva Convention. So if we were stopped by anybody, we actually, there's no right for them to search the car or to mess with us at all, which, you know, that extends to the Congolese government now protecting us, you know. So
I wonder, are they a little suspect, though, of a filmmaker? Are you restricted about what you can film and when?
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll have an advisor with us, a security person with us at all times. But it's not going to be, you know, machine guns like we had originally thought, which would really make, you know, my filmmaking style, I would really like to be as minimal and as non-intrusive as possible. And having armed security really makes that difficult. So
that has always put a hamper on things, hasn't it? I mean, that machine gun at the side.
Yeah. We're really excited.
Well, it's still very brave of you.
When the orchestra's advocated on your behalf, too. They really want their story to be told, it sounds like.
Yeah, we're lucky, super lucky. And it's really rare for Americans, especially right now, to get visas. And I should correct you, the sanctions actually are the other way around. It's the U.S. has sanctions on the president of the Congo. And so that just makes it hard for, it's tricky. But yeah, we got really lucky. Kaori wrote a beautiful letter and so did the orchestra. Yeah, we got incredibly lucky. A lot of people are really surprised that we were able to pull that off.
And then do you see this as a short documentary?
So what we're doing right now is creating, so up until this point, Music Beyond does not have any professional quality media. It's a fairly young nonprofit. I volunteered my efforts and my time, as well as my partner Tarek Fuda. We're volunteering our time to go over there to help create basically a commercial, something that can be easily shared on Facebook or YouTube or whatever, that can help promote, just give people a quick idea of what Music Beyond is. So yeah, we're thinking a short video just to really explain and get the message across of the good that Music Beyond is doing.
Well, congratulations and best of luck on this very exciting journey. So Jessica leaves for the Congo November 25th, and if you'd like to learn more about the project or follow this journey, check out musicbeyond.org.
That's
Jessica, thank you for being in the studio with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Anna Page, Corby Skinner, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.